Lights, turn off the lights, and we'll start with my presentation right there. And in the back, Dumont. See right there, that's still not enough. There we go. Okay. Now that's much better. Okay, we're going to start out with this, and I have only a half an hour to do this, so I don't have a lot of time. So I'm gonna have to bypass some of the incidentals, like, who am I? Who the heck am I? And how did I get interested in this? What are my bona fides or stuff like that? I just don't have time. But come to my, yeah, I believe in the old saying, chair and chair alike. So, okay. Okay, tonight I'm going to talk about the political parties and the secret combination. We've got to ask ourselves a question. Do you think Satan would be interested in securing both political parties, both major political parties in America to his advantage? Wouldn't that make sense? It makes sense to me that he would have both political parties under his control so that either political party won't go far astray from what he wants them to do. When I start out with my lectures, I always start out with this. With all of my lectures, I start out with this quotation from J. Edgar Hoover. He says, in any struggle, it is essential to know both what you're fighting for and what you're fighting against. If knowledge of the former is lacking, the will to win will be absent. If knowledge of the latter is absent, confusion and uncertainty will result. Well, we have to understand what we're fighting for and what we're fighting against. What we're fighting for is for the agency of man, of course. This is just a continuation of the fight that we had in the pre-existence. What we're fighting against is Satan, his mortal agents and his organizations and his philosophies that he has instilled upon the majority of mankind. And most people are being fooled to a greater or lesser degree by the wiles of Satan. Okay. President Benson said this, if American freedom is lost, if America is destroyed, if our blood-bought freedom is surrendered, it will be because of Americans. The facts are clear. Our problem centers in Washington, D.C., and this applies to the administration of both political parties. Now, when I gave this once, somebody objected right off the bat, oh, no, you can't be talking about the Republican Party. I kind of said, well, why don't you just let me give the presentation and I'll give forth the evidence and then you can make up your mind. And afterwards he came up and said, well, you know, by golly, you make sense. So let's find out just how much influence there is with both. Now, I was going to BYU about 100 years ago when I was younger. And I was in the BYU bookstore one day, and I saw this book called The Powers That Be, and it was fascinating to me. The author, G. William Domhoff, was a professor of sociology at the University of California at Santa Barbara. And he wrote this book from a sociological point of view. That is, what is the effect of the power elite upon society? What societal changes have taken place because of the influence of the power elite? And he went down and mentioned all of the organizations that I have been talking about for years. And it just was fascinating. But he's not a political scientist. He's a sociological professor. But he said this: the candidate selection process is the means by which elective offices are filled. It is a process in which most politicians develop binding ties to one or another clique with the power elite while professing to speak for the people. So they develop these ties to the power elite, and yet they say they're talking on behalf of the people. Many of the largest donors to give to both parties, In 1972, for example, 36% of the 10,000 and over donors gave to candidates of both political parties. Whatever the motivation for these split gifts, they help give members of the power elite access to both political parties. Now, let's bring that up more up to date. In this last election, guess who was the primary, the largest primary donor to Obama? Goldman Sachs, you got it right. Guess who was the second greatest political donor to Romney? Goldman Sachs. And it goes on down the line. These power elite give a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars, to both candidates for president. And they get mighty miffed if those candidates won't do what they want them to do. Those gifts are not given out of, you know, the goodness of their hearts. So that tells us right there that money buys power. That's the way the world works today. Money buys power. Okay? It's important to understand that. Now, I could talk about this book, Tragedy and Hope, it says down here on the bottom. I could talk about that for a long time, but I don't have the time to say much about it, except that it is one of the most important books on conspiracy theory of the 20th century. It was written by a man, Carol Quigley, who was a member of this conspiracy, and he was bragging on it. He was proud to be a member of it, and he bragged about it. And I would encourage everyone here to get a copy of that book and get it from Amazon.com. But it's well worth it. Tragedy and Hope. And it says this about the political parties. I'm going to have three different quotes from Tragedy and Hope about this. To Morgan, all political parties were simply organization to be used. And the firm always was careful to keep a foot in all camps. Morgan himself, Dwight Morrow, and other partners were allied with the Republicans. Russell C. Leffingwell was allied with the Democrats. Grayson Murphy was allied with the extreme right. That meant the Nazi Party in the 1920s, which was just getting a very small, but it was just starting. And Grayson Murphy was allied with them, and Thomas W. Lamont was allied with the left. That meant the socialists and the communists. He gave money to the Socialist Party of America and the Communist Party of America. To Morgan, maybe he attributed the use of tax-exempt foundations for controlling these activities. Now, these large tax-exempt foundations, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation, the Fund for the Republic, the Guggenheim Foundation, all of these were given charters from the federal government, and one of the clauses in the charter was that they cannot use the foundations for political purposes whatsoever. And yet they, every campaign season, these guys use their grant-making powers to interfere with the political process, and they violate those charters all the time, and nobody does anything about it. So even way back then, in the days of Morgan and Rockefeller, they were using their money to buy power in the Democrat and the Republican parties. But up and on. Here's another quote from Tragedy and Hope. They, the Morgan interests, expected that they would be able to control both political parties equally. Indeed, some of them intended to contribute to both, just like G. William Domhoff said, and to allow an alteration of the two parties in public office in order to do three things. In order to, first, conceal their own influence, second, inhibit any exhibition of independence by politicians, and third, allow the electorate to believe that they were exercising their own free choice. Such an alteration of the parties on the federal scene occurred in the period 1880 to 1896, with business influence, or at least Morgan's influence, as great in the Democratic as in the Republican administrations. So if you think that the parties were compromised rather recently, take a look at this. It's been going on for over 100 years. Now I'm going to play you an audio from W. Cleon Skousen. He gave a speech in 1977, I believe, shortly after Carter took office. And he talks about many things. And in this talk, which is over an hour long, I'm just going to play a four-minute excerpt. In this talk, to give you a prelude to this excerpt that I'm giving, he talked about how the communists infiltrated our government, how Roosevelt and Truman had communist friends and advisors. He talks about how Alger Hiss was a close advisor to Truman, and then he got convicted of espionage for the Soviet Union, and he got sent to prison for it. He talked about how the Rosenbergs betrayed the U.S. atomic secrets to the Soviet Union, for which they were executed. And then he talks about how the communists took over China in 1948, and our State Department was helpful in allowing them to do that. And so that's the prelude to this excerpt that I'm giving you. And so the people were fed up with it. They wanted to elect an anti-communist, and they had their man. So this is what he says here. Secure.
Well, as you know, our people were in quite a tither by 1952. When our people are unhappy, they want to change. And they had the man that was going to blow the lid off of this whole thing. J. Reuben Clark was so excited, he says, now we'll get the story. We'll get Senator Taft in there as president. He knows this whole secret combination set up, and our people will hear what has been done to them these many years. And so our people all went back to the National Convention to elect Senator Taft. An amazing thing happened. Almost immediately after all of the Republicans got back to their convention, who appears but some of the most radical left of unions, of the press, very prominent people out of the government, and they would buttonhole the various state chairmen. They'd say, look, we've got to have a change, no doubt about it. Country can't stand this anymore. We've got to get out of that Korean War. Everything's in a mess. We want to change. And we'll support you. Yeah, we'll. Republicans have been out of power since 1932. I mean, it'd be nice to be back. You mean you'll support us? Yeah, we've got to have a change for the sake of America. Well, that's just great. Well, get behind us. We're going to put Taft in. No. We'll never support Taft. If you want our support, you've got to get somebody else. Well, who would you support? Well, you take somebody popular, like Ike Eisenhower. Oh, would you support Ike? Yes. Ike, huh? Yeah, think about that a little bit. The whole country would support Ike. Everybody loves Ike. Boy, I'll tell you, those Republican strategists got into a smoke-filled room, and within 24 hours, the candidate had shifted from Taft to Eisenhower, a registered Democrat, who was a very great fighter against Nazism and wide open to communism. Later admitted, when I talked to Zhukov about the advantages of communism, I really couldn't think of anything to answer. You can't meet Ike Eisenhower, or couldn't have met Ike, without being very impressed by him. Just a nice guy. And one day I gave a speech in Seattle, one night, to a rather large audience, and I told the life of Eisenhower and how he sort of fell for this thing, did just exactly what they wanted him to, participated in one event after another that went right along toward this big cave-in that they were gradually building, used his good offices and the confidence the people had in him to do certain things that the candidate from the other side probably couldn't have gotten away with. When I got all through, a little tiny fellow, about 80 years old, came up and said, "Mr. Carlson, that's an interesting talk. Where'd you get all that information?" And I said, "Well, I've been gathering over the years." He said, "You know, some of that's, I didn't think anybody knew that, but Ike's family." "Oh," I said, "no, there's nothing that I've said that isn't public." "Well," he says, I always used to tell Ike that he and one of my other brothers who became President John Hopkins, they just had the wrong approach." He said, "They've always been for this big one world thing." And he says, "Very interesting to me. Have you talk about my brother and give the real story, the way he really was." This was Edgar Eisenhower. But anyway, he said, "That's the way it really has been." Well, that's as much as I have to tell. Ike went in, did his bit, and we succeeded in losing Cuba beautifully, carefully manipulated. Maybe you've forgotten that Ike's State Department sponsored Castro, foisted him onto the Cuban people. Did you remember that? Cubans didn't want him. Our ambassador came up and pleaded with the man that was on the Cuban desk, "For heaven's sakes, what are you doing back in Castro?" Ezra Taft Benson pleaded with Eisenhower to take another approach. No, it was going to be Castro. Make Russia happy. That really is what lost the election for Richard Nixon.
Now, what are the important points of that speech? What were the important points? That the powers that be are able to influence the national conventions if nothing else can happen. And they'll go in there and they'll make people, they'll change their minds. The people wanted an anti-communist. The people wanted an anti-communist. And so they go back there and sell them on the idea that Eisenhower is anti-communist when he was really pro-communist. He's never a member of the Communist Party, per se, but he was very much pro-communist. And if you read the book, The Politician, by Robert Welch, it will show you his true colors. Show you exactly what he was like. The Politician, by Robert Welch. It talks about Dwight Eisenhower when he was a general in World War II and as President of the United States, how he sold out to communism time after time after time. The Hungarian Freedom Revolt in 1956 was crushed because of the State Department and Eisenhower sending a secret memo to the Soviet Union telling them they would not object if they invaded. So instead of supporting freedom, he helped crush freedom with the telegram they sent to Moscow. But let's go on. I don't have a lot of time left. Where am I? Here's a book that I'd like everybody to read: FDR, My Exploited Father-in-Law. About Curtis Dahl, who married Anna Roosevelt, his daughter, and was there in the FDR White House, and he saw communists come and go all the time. And he talks about, Curtis Dahl talks about the takeover of the parties. He said, "Usually, carefully screened leading actors are picked well in advance of election day by a small group, picked for both major parties, thereby reducing the promotional risk to just about zero. On the political stage, one must be groomed by backers, in other words, by the elite, to become a statesman, or in other words, a puppet. It is desirable for such a candidate to have great personal ambition and, perchance, to be vulnerable to blackmail for some past occurrences. Hence, someone not apt to become too independent in time, but always amenable to suggestions, in other words, orders, on the policy level. Okay, here's a great quote. I'm going to spend some time on this, probably the rest of the time I have. From Carol Quigley, Tragedy and Hope. This is extremely important you get this. The argument that the two parties should represent opposed ideals and policies is a foolish idea. Instead, the two parties should be almost identical so that the American people can throw the rascals out at any election without leading to any profound or extensive shifts in policy. The policies that are vital and necessary for America are no longer subjects of significant disagreement, but are disputable only in details. I want you to remember that, because I'm going to show you the next two slides, hopefully if I have time, that reinforce that idea. I'm going to translate that sentence for you, because Carol Quigley gives it gives a spin on it. Here's the real translation of it. The policies that are vital and necessary for the elite are no longer subjects of significant disagreement, but are disputable only in details. The elite want these policies, and they will not tolerate any politician who tries to deviate from their basic policies. So let's go on to the very next slide. Now, this book was printed in 1966. Let's see how what George W. Bush says about the exact same thing when he ran against Gore in 2000. Bush says this: during the fall campaign, we differed about the details of these proposals, but there was remarkable consensus about the important issues before us. So he said basically the same thing that Carol Quigley said back in 1966. You can't buck the basic proposals, but you can argue about the details. Excellent schools, in other words, Marxist public schools, retirement and health security, in other words, entitlements which are totally unconstitutional, tax relief, in other words, more taxes, a strong military, in other words, a policeman of the world attitude, a bully that will go in and attack nations that have never attacked them, and a more civil society, in other words, tearing down the fabric of American life, destroying public morals and destroying the family and helping destroy civil society instead of reinforce it. Okay, so he basically says we differed about the details, but the basic policies we agreed on, which is what Quigley said in the previous slide. Now let's listen to Nancy Pelosi. I'm going to give you a little video here. Whoops. Wait a minute. Come on. Do it right. There, okay. I'm going to bypass that slide. I'm going to give you this small video of Nancy Pelosi, and she basically says the same thing. Okay? Let's see what she has to say.
Let's just try to do what is right for our country. I think that President Obama is what is right for our country. But if you have a different view, try to make sure that the values that I'm sure we all share are reflected in the choice that you make. Another way I would say is to my Republican friends, take back your party, so that it doesn't matter so much who wins the election, because we have shared values about, again, the education of our children, the growth of our economy, how we defend our country, have security and civil liberties, how we respect our seniors. Because there's so many things at risk right now, and perhaps another question I'll go into if you want, but the fact is that elections shouldn't matter as much as they do. Should be someplace on the spectrum where we respect each other's views and all the rest. But if it comes to a place where there doesn't seem to be shared values, then that can be problematic for the country, as I think you can see right now.
Yes, we got to have shared values. We have to have basic policies that the elite have given to us, and we have to believe in what the elite wants us to do and wants us to believe in. Oh. Sometimes I want to go take somebody like that and beat them with an ugly stick. I'm going to beat as in with a stick. Okay. I'm going to close this with a video by Judge Andrew Napolitano, a great constitutionalist, and he's going to give a lot of what if statements here.
What if Democrats and Republicans were two wings of the same bird of prey? Tonight, what if elections don't matter? What if elections were actually useful tools for social control? What if they just provided the populace with meaningless participation in a process that validates an establishment that never meaningfully changes? What if that establishment doesn't want and doesn't have the consent of the governed? What if the two-party system was actually a mechanism used to limit so-called public opinion? What if there were more than two sides to every issue, but the two parties wanted to box you into a corner, one of their corners? What if there's no such thing as public opinion, because every thinking person has opinions that are uniquely his own? What if what we call public opinion was just a manufactured narrative that makes it easier to convince people that if their views are different, then there's something wrong with that, or there's something wrong with them? What if the whole purpose of the Democratic and Republican parties was not to expand voters' choices, but to limit them? What if the widely perceived differences between the two parties was just an illusion? What if the heart of the government policy remains the same no matter who's in the White House? What if the heart of government policy remains the same no matter what the people want? What if those vaunted differences between Democrat and Republican were actually just minor disagreements? What if both parties just want power and are willing to have young people fight meaningless wars in order to enhance that power? What if both parties continue to fight the war on drugs just to give bureaucrats and cops bigger budgets and more jobs? What if government policies didn't change when government leaders did? What if no matter who won an election, government stayed the same? What if government was really a revolving door for political hacks bent on exploiting the people once they're in charge? What if both parties supported welfare, war, debt, bailouts, and big government? What if the rhetoric that candidates displayed on the campaign trail was dumped after electoral victory? What if Barack Obama campaigned as an anti-war, pro-civil liberties candidate and then waged senseless wars while assaulting your rights that the Constitution is supposed to protect? What if George W. Bush campaigned on a platform of non-intervention and small government and then waged a foreign policy of muscular military intervention and a domestic policy of vast government borrowing and growth? What if Bill Clinton declared that the era of big government was over, but actually just convinced Republicans like Newt Gingrich that they can get what they want out of big government too? What if the Republicans went along with it? What if Ronald Reagan spent 6 years running for president, promising to shrink the government, but then the government grew while he was in the White House? What if, notwithstanding Reagan's ideas and cheerfulness and libertarian rhetoric, there really was no Reagan revolution at all? What if all this is happening again? What if Rick Santorum is being embraced by voters who want small government, even though Senator Santorum voted for the Patriot Act, for an expansion of Medicare, and for raising the debt ceiling by trillions of dollars? What if Mitt Romney is being embraced by voters who want anyone but Barack Obama, but they don't realize that Mitt Romney might as well be Barack Obama on everything from warfare to welfare? What if Ron Paul is being ignored by the media, not because, as it claims, he's unappealing or unelectable, but because he doesn't fit into the pre-manufactured public opinion mold used by the establishment to pigeonhole the electorate and create the so-called narrative that drives media coverage of elections? What if the biggest difference between most candidates was not substance, but style? What if those stylistic differences were packaged as substantive ones to reinforce the illusion of a difference between Democrats and Republicans? What if Mitt Romney wins and ends up continuing most of the same policies that Barack Obama promoted? What if Barack Obama's policies, too, are merely extensions of those from George W. Bush? What if a government that manipulated us could be fired? What if a government that lacked the true and knowing consent of the governed could be dismissed? What if it were possible to have a real game changer? What if we need a Ron Paul to preserve and protect our freedoms from the government? What if we could make elections matter again? What if we could do something about this?
I have so much more that I could say. This particular presentation could go on for another hour, but I don't have the time, so I'm going to conclude here by saying that we have to understand what's really going on in the political arena these days. And we have to be able to vote for somebody who really would make a difference. Now, Scott Bradley has run on the Constitution Party ticket for senator twice now, and he has made some difference, and we've been able to get some people that get their eyes opened. But we really need more participation. Now, I am a proud member of the Constitution Party, and the Constitution Party is dedicated to the proposition that we need to return America back to its foundation, back to the vision of the original Constitution as in the vision or in the viewpoint of the founding fathers. That's what we need to do, because it is that original Constitution that made America the greatest nation on the face of the earth, and it is that original Constitution that will bless us with freedoms again and make us great again. So I would encourage all of you to look up cputah.org. If you're not a member of the Constitution Party, I would encourage you to join it. cputah.org. Thanks a lot, Scott.